This show is sponsored by author Jen Nixon. If you are looking for action-packed sci-fi, fantasy, or paranormal stories with a dash of romance, check out one of Jen's fast-paced and pulse-pounding series. Her books are available on Amazon Kindle and in paperback. To learn more and read free samples, visit her website, www.jennixon.com. That's Jen with two N's, Nixon.com. You've tuned in to Myth Behaving, a podcast where we get up close and personal with today's most imaginative authors. Every episode, we'll be sitting down with a new writer to discuss their magical world, futuristic visions, and how they bring their wildest ideas to the page. Aiding in the exploration today is the ever stalwart Jen Nixon. Jen, how did you survive the East Coast earthquake?
I didn't even feel it.
No?
No, because I'm in Pennsylvania now.
I'm not even trying.
Like, I leave New Jersey and all the fun stuff happens.
4.8, right? It was a 4.8.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually felt the one in 2011 when it hit Virginia and I was in New Jersey.
I think that was like a
6.
Oh.
And I felt my whole apartment building like swayed back and forth like, and I was like, whoa, that was weird. But yeah, I didn't feel this one. A couple people that live in the valley around here in Northeast Pennsylvania felt it. And all of my friends in New Jersey felt it, but I did not feel it.
You got nothing.
How was your week?
Well, no earthquakes, but not that we would know anyhow. So we did have we had like a 5.1, a 5.5, a month or so back. And that one was close enough. It almost felt like a bomb. Like when
the
whole house shook for a minute and.
Yeah.
And it broke a pipe that had been breaking in my parents' house. So,
That must be fun.
That was fun.
So, who do we have on the podcast this time?
Oh, I am so excited to welcome. I've known this guy for a long time. So, I'm very excited to welcome today John Wilker. He's been on before, I'm pleased to say. So, you can look up his previous recording and see if he told any lies. John is a science fiction author who dabbles in action adventure thrillers under the pen name Jay Beckett. He's written almost 20 books to date across 4 series. When not writing, he plays in his garden, tying new vegetables that he refuses to eat, but that his wife loves. Some of his best writing happens on the patio of his local craft brewery. John loves to write wherever he is when traveling, which means he sits in lots of coffee shops, bars, and cafes, but also on the deck of a boat floating down the Nile River, on the bow of a cruise ship in Alaska, and in a tent in Tanzania while a lion growled somewhere nearby. And because you can never have enough distractions, he also dabbles in photography. So watch out, Ansel Adams. Ladies and gentlemen, John Wilker.
Welcome, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Any earthquakes?
Intro.
Oh, sorry.
No earthquakes. I'm in Denver, and no earthquakes.
No earthquakes.
As a SoCal transplant, I am happy for that.
Right.
I've had more than enough for my share.
But lots of snow, right? You guys have had some weird weather this year.
We did have some weird weather. We've had a lot of late snow, which was wet and heavy. And then yesterday, relative to the time that we're recording, we had a wind warning that downed a whole bunch of trees and rattled the house for the good part of the night.
Fun.
Wow.
Yeah. Weather fun.
The weather fun. The weather is weird.
Yep.
It's true. So I have a question starting right off the back after hearing that bio of yours. How do you write in public? Aren't you distracted?
No. Depending, sometimes, like a lot of times my wife and I will go to the brewery, and so I won't have AirPods in case she needs to talk to me, but a lot of times I just put AirPods in and put up some music and just get down to it. I do better, I've realized over the years, in noisy environments than in quiet. Like even in the house, if I'm writing, the TV has to be on or the stereo needs to be playing or something. I can't do the quiet.
Ah.
And what specifically do you listen to?
I listen to just about anything. For a while, when I had a co-working space, I would actually listen to like coffee shop sounds, which I just kind of droned out. Like I had like no conversations versus like the random conversations that happened in the co-working space. Beyond that though, and that was really, it was, yeah, tuning like one weird ambient noise just to tune out another one. But normally it's just whatever music. I have had a Pandora account forever, and so I'll usually just pick something and let it go to town
Yeah,
until
Pandora's
Chariots of
almost
Fire
old
comes on.
school. Yeah.
I still use it every day.
Oh,
Yeah, same here. Yeah.
Oh, you guys are both old school.
Yeah,
I'm
I'm
I
totally.
know, yeah.
Wow.
Because it's free.
Yep.
I don't mind listening to
I've
commercials. I ain't paying for it.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I have the paying account, but I've had it so long it's only like $5 a month or
Oh, look
something.
at
Oh,
you.
nice.
You're
Yeah.
like when it was
Yeah.
outrageously priced at $5.
Got my rent control.
Exactly.
Got my rent
Wow.
control Pandora.
Yeah. Mr. Moneybags over here. No, that's great.
That's great. Yeah, my ambient noise is a fan. That's it. That's it,
Oh,
fan.
there,
I'm good. Yeah.
I do. I like YouTube, and I'll put on like what is it called? One Step from Hell, Two Steps from Hell. They have a lot of epic
I don't
sounding.
know,
It's a lot
but
of
I want
epic
more steps
sounding
than that.
theme music
Well,
that
that's
they.
cool.
Yeah, I and I have no idea if they have like a platform or anything beyond that. I just stumbled into them once, and they have like a 3 hour, 6 hour. Great, then I can just put it on a loop if I'm really gonna write like for 12 hours, which just never happened. But yeah, then it just goes.
But it could.
It
Yeah.
could. I
I
like
don't
the
think
idea
it.
that it could. So cover
Exactly.
that
Yeah.
base.
Nice.
John, you've got four series, which is awesome. Which one would a new reader, which one would you want a new reader to pick up first to really get into you?
Probably my first one, the Space Rogue series. That's the one, that's what I started with. And it's complete-ish. It's 10 books, and I made book 10 what I call kind of an off ramp, since I know, like, I love long series. Like, some of the stuff, like a couple of my favorite authors I've written are like 30 books into this, like, just long series.
Wow.
But not everybody does, I know. So I'm like, all right, well, book 10, it ends. Everyone's happy. There's no real loose ends. Like, if you're dying to just like move on with life and not keep reading this story, the 10th book in the Space Rogue series gives you that without making you feel like you're not going to know what happens. And then basically the story picks right back up in the next series, book one, as if, basically book 11.
Right. Same characters, different characters, shoot off characters, all of the
Nope,
above.
say. Yeah, all the above, same character. The first book in that series is semi spin-off of like just two characters kind of primarily on their own adventure. But the rest of the team comes in. They're in there in the beginning and they come back in the end. The second book that just came out earlier or later last month has everybody together, the same team, and yeah, same type of adventures, same everything picked right up.
Nice. I like that.
And why that series?
It's complete, since I know a lot of folks tend to, wait to start reading something if they'd find that it's a series until it's complete. So I don't want anyone to see and be like, well, I'll just bookmark this and never really come back, but tell myself I will. And beyond that, that's really kind of the main one, I think. The other series I think are great, obviously. Hard to pick your own, which children are your favorites. As a non-parent, I assume it's hard. I don't know. I have a favorite dog out of our two, but I mean, I love the other one, but one is kind of mine and one is kind of my wife's. But yeah, I mean, I think the others are all great. It just kind of depends. It's right now it's the three are kind of space opera sci-fi, and then I have the pen name ones. So for folks that like action adventure, kind of no sci-fi elements, then I send them down the other path.
You've also got kind of a contemporary mystery treasure hunting series, right?
Yeah, that's the one I did under the pen name, which I wouldn't do it under a pen name now, but at two books, I'm like, all right, well, I'm not undoing this, so
You're
I'm gonna
not
stick
going to
with
go
it.
back.
No, I did think about it, but I was like, ugh, that is so much effort for not enough reward. Like, it's
What did you do the pen name because you were right on that verge where people where authors were told, yeah, if you're going to do different genres, you should have different names so people don't get confused. Were you still in that school? Yeah. I remember
Yep,
lots
I
of
was
people
like,
coming in
yeah.
asking about that.
everyone was like, oh yeah, you have to have a pen name, you don't want to confuse things, which, you know, if I was doing sci-fi and erotica or even just straight up romance, makes perfect sense.
Right.
But
right.
really, I've realized the Venn diagram of like sci-fi readers and just kind of action adventure action. Mystery thrillers, it's not that, they're not that far apart.
Yeah. No. Yeah, there's a lot of overlap. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so if you find an author you like you like the way they tell the story. Like I've read, because I like, well, I like you obviously, but I like, what's his name? The historic fiction guy. And like I've read so much of his stuff and it just like a lot of it really isn't my forte. Like I'm not into Napoleon, but the Sharps Rifle Corps group, it's so fun to read that I'll just, because I like the way he tells the story. I just like it.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like that whole pen name nonsense anyway.
No, I definitely wouldn't do it again. And it's just hard to, I get why a lot of folks do it. And that's totally legit. But yeah, for me, I'm like, if someone decides to either take out their frustrations with me on my writing or vice versa, I'm like, okay, well, that's just going to have to be the way it is. Because I, even with the pen name, I'm like, I'm still signing the books, John Wilker. I'm not trying to like come up with a signature of Jay Beckett. And
yeah,
I'm like, yeah, no, thank you.
And anymore, if they wanted to find out who you were, they could find out who you were.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not hiding it. Like,
yeah.
Exactly. And most authors won't. They want to be found. They want people to track them down. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's I definitely want to put as few barriers as I can in front of that.
Right.
And which do you enjoy writing more these days, the thrillers or the sci-fi?
I enjoy writing the sci-fi more. I've realized that the thrillers are a little bit more challenging for me, only because they're set in the real world. I kind of set them like, you know, 10, 20 years in the future. For no particular reason, I just kind of randomly pick that. But then I try and set, like, they're all based on real world places. And so I end up spending all this time researching, you know, what's this place? Which streets go here? What's the name of this, you know, museum and this island? And it just ends up taking me so much longer to, like, progress through things. So I'm like, all right, well, they got to do this. Is there a building that fits that description in this area? Or, you know, a road, or, you know, would this line up if someone like, and I'm sure I would love for to have this problem. I have not had it yet where someone, you know, well, actually is me on any of this. So far it's all for naught. No one, if I just made everything up, I doubt it would be noticed, but I'm still hopeful that someday someone says, I appreciate that that's actually the name of that building or that was described correctly. But
yeah,
but yeah, it definitely slows me down.
Do you go to the places? Have you been to the places?
No, the closest I've been in the first book. So yeah, it's just me and Google Maps basically picking the stuff out. But the first book I set on an island off the west coast of Canada. I just kind of opened it up, panned around. I was like, yep, this seems like it'll fit the bill for what I'm going for. And then we passed it on my cruise, on a cruise that we were doing to Alaska. And didn't even think anything of it, like booking the group, never once thought of it. And then we're on the boat and they have that little, you know, here's where we are kind of map.
Yeah.
And it was on the map. We couldn't see it. We were too far away. But I was like, oh, sweet. We're actually going to pass this island that I wrote about.
That's awesome.
But, yeah. Alas, did not actually see it, but it was somewhere off the horizon a bit.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that was my closest brush to a real place I wrote about.
But it's more fun, obviously, in the sci-fi world because you can make up the stuff as you go along and then just, you know, fill in all the details later.
Yes. Yeah. That's I don't slow down nearly as much in the sci-fi because I just start going and then kind of backfill as I need to. But yeah, I'm not like, I find that, yeah, with the other one, I'll hard stop. I'll hit a spot and be like, okay, well, now I guess I'm going to spend some time on Wikipedia and kind of lose my train of thought on the writing and have to get back into the flow. And I haven't figured out a way to address that that solves that problem. So yeah, those books just take a while.
I have. Yeah. Big parentheses, more detail here later, and then keep going. Sometimes it works. And then sometimes you're like, oh, what did I want to do here?
Yeah, what was
so
that?
So sometimes you need to leave yourself more notes than more detail here.
Yeah.
But I find that has worked too, because I, you know, you want to move the plot along, but you need to give the reader details to immerse them into the story. So yep. It's a fine balance.
Yeah. For me, it's the square brackets and to do. And so I'll pepper those throughout if I'd rather keep moving than spend time researching. I'm like, figure this out later. To do. Mm-hmm. And that's the search for those later.
It works for me if I come back very quickly and fill it in. Otherwise, my brain will latch on to that section and won't let it go, and I can't progress.
I get stuck.
I get stuck in a, you should be researching this. Why don't you know it yet?
That's part of my problem. Or I'll hit a point where I'm like, well, I can't skip this because I need to know, like,
right,
what this building or area does will dictate something down the line. So I guess I got to figure this out now.
Yeah. You don't want to force it later. Yeah.
Yeah. Or have to end up rewriting a good chunk of it because it's like, well, there's no waterfall there.
You fool.
Yeah. Great.
Awesome.
When you were honing your craft as a young writer, what did you find useful? Workshops, online groups? Where did you find the most help when you were learning to write?
This episode of Myth Behaving is brought to you by the Bath Bomb Diva, producing fine, handcrafted bath bombs and shower steamers. Scents ranging from fruits to floral to musks to weird French names, the Diva offers a wide selection for maximum olfactory goodness. Bath bombs are offered with and without prizes inside and made using water-soluble dyes for no messy residue. In honor of our second year with the Diva Lab is sending me a super secret new product to try. Because of how all these great products make me smell, in a good way, I can't wait to try this one out and report back. You can try all the Diva's creations at www.bathbombdiva.com. And thanks again to Bath Bomb Diva for sponsoring the show.
Online groups for sure. That's where Rob and I met.
Nice.
So yeah, lots of Facebook groups, lots of other internet forums were kind of how I got started. I way back before I really like fully committed to writing, I did one or two like online kind of seminars that weren't necessarily like, I don't even know if they even are things that exist anymore, but like stuff I just happened to find. I was like, oh, that seems interesting. It's like a class where you submitted a little bit of samples and whatnot. And so I did a few of those while I was working, and then, but none of them ever stuck. And then, when I decided to make more of a go of writing, lots of groups to kind of talk about craft. And then as I got more into it, talk about the business of it.
Online groups. They're great when you're starting out. I think you probably would agree with this, John. They're great when you're starting out because you can ask all those questions that novice writers need to ask. But then later, when you're not so novice, they kind of can be a burden. Maybe not. But that's kind of where I fall out with them now.
Yeah.
Depends on how many people are in them too.
It does. And it depends on the community as well. Like, how toxic has the community become?
Yeah. Lots of variables.
Yeah. But I do think for new writers starting out, being able to go into a space, if it's a good community, like good, warm, welcoming, go ahead, ask your questions, community. I think those are good places for new authors to come and say, hey, how many pages should my novel be? And then everybody can say, oh, it's really a word count thing. Let's introduce you to word count.
Yes.
Because you got to know that's really what publishers look for. They don't look for pages. They want to know word count because pages are variable. So, you know, those early things like what font should I use? You know what? It really doesn't matter until you're submitting.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you're on a ride in Wingdings, knock yourself out.
Knock yourself. Do it. Do it. Like that's a
great. I'm going to do it. All kinds. Yeah. Comic Sans.
Yep.
The most.
I do totally agree.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. And that's why the internet is so much easier now than when I started 20 years ago because it was harder to search for answers. You actually had to go outside of the internet to find answers back then. So I had to like network with like people in real life. Scary.
Talk to people. You had to talk face to face even.
Or yes.
People in real life.
Monthly groups and everything.
Scary. They would shudder, call you on the phone. I know. Can you imagine?
Not.
Can you...
I just heard a No Doubt Spiderweb song today. I was in the car waiting for my brother, and it was leave a message and I'll call you back. I'm like, nobody even leaves messages anymore. It's so weird.
Why are you not texting me like a civilized human being so I can?
But that's the great thing about being sci-fi. We have to think of what it's going to be. 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 years in the future, and. And we're not going to be right because it's going to be here in like 10 years.
Yeah,
that's how fast
people will still
going.
Be leaving. Yeah, and people will still be ignoring calls on whichever fancy sci-fi device they receive them on.
Exactly.
Their implanted wrist communicating.
Yeah.
Yes. Everybody's talking to their hand. Yeah. Yeah. John, what prediction have you made that you would like to see come to fruition?
I think just in nothing specific, but in general, I would definitely love for us to, as a human beings in general, kind of figure our stuff out and move beyond Earth. Not quite in like Elon colonized Mars or bust style, less of the bust. But yeah, I would love to see that, and which is why I enjoy writing sci-fi so much, is I get to go off into the universe and explore other things that aren't just what we've got here.
Right, that's awesome.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm more of a utopia sci-fi future than a dystopian in my thinking, but in my writing, I kind of do both, which is fun.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I definitely gravitate more towards kind of the grittier part of sci-fi, of not necessarily, dystopic, but also, things aren't peachy keen. Less Star Trek, even though I enjoy Star Trek quite a bit. Everybody still has to struggle a little bit for reactor fuel and food on the table and beer in the fridge. And.
But still beer, which is good to know.
Middle class sci-fi. I like it.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. I've definitely, beer features heavily in all of the series. There is beer or space beer, which in the one series is Grum.
I'm guessing you're an IPA guy because you're a Denver guy. So I'm guessing IPA.
I am not.
Oh.
No,
he shoots. He misses.
Okay. Like
wait.
The polar opposite would be.
Okay. Let me think. Because you did say you were from SoCal. So let me go. So not a lager, a pilsner.
In a pinch.
No. Oh. I
could do
I'm
pilsner.
Really.
Yeah.
0%.
You drink Guinness, right?
All right.
Apparently, I'm hard to pin down on this.
Wow. Okay. Go ahead. Hit me. Well, or do you have one? Like, do you have? Because I don't have one. They're like, I can go into a bar and you know what? I'm not an IPA guy. I don't like beer that bites back. I don't like it at all. But I know people love IPAs or double IPAs. That's weird to me. But
yeah, those people are wrong. But
good. Okay. Great. Like a nice lager, a smooth ale. Like I can get behind all that stuff. So
yeah, I'm fairly agnostic. Other than, no IPAs, please. Typically, I'll drink a wheat beer or a sour beer would be my go-to. But yeah, if I walked into a place and they didn't have those, but they had a lager or a pilsner, then it becomes any port in a storm.
Right. Then you're
as long as it's not an IPA.
Like, nice.
If it was an IPA, I'd be like, you just have water.
Yeah, put a little lemon in there for me. To
I'd be fine.
We'll pretend.
Yeah. Oh, juice cups. I'll just have one of those. That's fine.
That's great. Yeah, I will drink no beer at all.
What do you drink, Jen? Do you drink anything?
I drink iced tea.
Oh.
And tea, hot tea. Iced tea and hot tea. Yeah.
I mean,
every once in a while I'll have a drink, but not really my thing anymore. I stopped drinking when I was in my 20s.
Is it Earl Grey?
Yes, it is, of course. Captain Picard.
There we go.
I did specifically try Earl Grey tea because he drank it so much. And I'm like, I might as well just try it. And I'm like, and I like tea anyway. Mm-hmm. So I that's really literally all I drink is Earl Grey and Arnold Palmer. That's all I drink.
And Arnold Palmer's.
Yep.
Awesome.
I was the opposite. I'm not a huge tea drinker, although I can do it more now. But when I was like, oh, well, or this Earl Grey stuff must be pretty good. I'll try that. And I was like, ah, I do not know what he's going on about. This is horrible. I've warmed to it since, but it is still not, Earl Grey is still not my, not my jam.
Yeah, no, I like it. It's good for me. Works for me.
Yep.
Thank you, Picard.
Mm. Yeah. Opened up so many eyes to Earl Grey.
Yeah, I bet it went up when he started calling it out. I bet there's a correlation.
I've been trying to get Arizona iced tea to make an iced one because I drink it iced too.
An iced Earl Grey.
Oh yeah. Well, if you can go to Starbucks and get a London Fog, which is uh-huh. iced Earl Grey with, but it has lavender and vanilla in it. I don't like lavender in my food.
No.
But if you take the lavender out and leave the vanilla in it, then I can handle
then
it.
Then you're okay.
Yeah, it's called a London Fog. It's pretty good.
Nice.
Pretty good. Yeah.
John, what drink tips do you have for us? Do you have lavender in your drinks?
I do not have lavender in my drinks.
All right.
If it's a wheat beer, it's an orange or a lemon, but I'm also like, yeah, if you don't have any of those, I'm also just fine.
Yeah.
Like, nice. So I've had places be like, ooh, I'm sorry, we're all out of that. I'm like, I really don't care.
Have you ever made up any sci-fi drinks?
I have, in sort of. So in the Grand Human Empire series, I name all the beers off from the various planets within the Empire. So there's like a new Terra Lager. I don't remember who brewed the... That's what the main character drinks mostly. Somebody had a Hefeweizen, but now I don't remember which colony I attributed that the Hef to. But yeah, it is fun to kind of be like, oh yeah, this is, you know, brewed by these folks on this planet.
Mm.
Things like that. And then every once in a while in the Space Robes one, since there's, other than the main character, there's not a lot of humanity involved, I'll come up with all kinds of just various cocktail-y looking drinks that the main character reacts to, sometimes violently.
Tell us more about your Rogue Enterprises, because that's your new book, right? Galactic Instability is the new one?
Yep, that's the newest one. So yeah, in the Space Rogue series, it's just kind of, you know, very kind of Farscape. Guardians of Galactic, like they just kind of come together, they're, you know, solving various problems throughout the series, and it's kind of became like a running gag that towards the end they're like, they had formed kind of a business but it didn't have a name, and people would ask like, how do I find you, and like, you know, someone would make up one and the rest of them would be like, we are not calling ourselves that. It would go on and on until finally in the last book they're like, oh, Rogue Enterprises, that would work, and so kind of set up the company. And so then when I was like, okay, well, this series is going to now have an end point, I'll pick up a new one. I was like, okay, that's what I'll name the series now that it's the team name.
Yeah,
And so, yeah, book two of that series is what just came out last month, with the crew kind of going back to the same sector that where the first book of Space Rogue started, which kind of kicked it all off.
Nice. And are your characters still growing through the series, or have they matured into who they're like meant to be now?
A little of both. So one of the main characters is a Braylak. He's kind of, I basically illustrated him to look like kind of a green or gray alien, big head, you know, giant black eyes. For whatever reason, without really it being intentional, he's had the most growth. He's not necessarily like the main character is the human Will. But yeah, Benny, who's the Braylak, has had the most growth because he's kind of a hacker and kind of the team asshole. And then like has kind of grown, like he's mentoring someone now. And then I kind of introduced this order that's kind of my version of the Jedi, but they call them space wizards and kind of joke about that. And so he's and it was a dying thing. And so he kind of was like, oh, that looks fun. I could do that. And but he does it as kind of a scam. So he's constantly trying to like get free dinners out of it. And whenever he talks to people, he tries to like lower his voice so that he sounds more authoritative. But yeah, so he's kind of had the most arc, but I've tried to give everybody on the team some level of growth just so that, yeah, they weren't completely static from this point on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's important. We talk about that from time to time, but how characters really need to grow. You can't leave them as they are, even though you think they're cool where they're at.
Yeah.
they, readers will clue into it pretty quick that like they're the same person. 10 years has gone by and they're still the same. So
exactly.
Yeah, you can have one character like that. One.
Well, you could have one, but it can't be a main. Can't be a main. You can have a
sidekick.
Everybody
needs a Joey.
Somewhere. Right.
Although, to be fair, Joey actually did have growth.
Joey did have growth and got his own show. Yeah. So, So, well, he went down. I think we talked about this before. He went down and became a one-note joke, and then they brought him back up to his own show. So,
right.
Because I like Joey.
I did, too.
I like to think I'm a Chandler, but
yes.
Yeah, I'm probably a Joey. So, John, it has been so great to have you on. I've got one more question for you so we can wrap up here. And that question is, what advice would current you give past you on writing?
Probably hold off on that upload button.
Oh. Do tell.
That was you know, so the first book was kind of a NaNoWriMo win after like a decade of entering NaNo and kind of, you know, fitzing out after about 5 days. And, you know, passed it around to some friends who of course said, oh yeah, this is great, we love it, and threw it up there on Amazon. Didn't have the greatest cover, did not have nearly the editing it needed to have. And then I just had to, in hindsight, if I didn't fix that step, the next hindsight step I would have fixed would have been like unpublish it, fix it up and republish it. But by the time I realized I was like in that realm, I had already accumulated lots of sales. The reviews that were nice were all positive. There was just lots of negative ones. So then I kind of just had to fight my way back to a better star average for the book, which eventually did. And it's fine now. You'd have to dig pretty deep to find those reviews that talk about the lack of editing and things. But yeah, in hindsight, I was like, if I had just waited a few months, saved up, you know, hired that editor then, did that kind of thing.
Right.
It just would have been a less stressful first go at self-publishing. So yeah, that would be my biggest advice.
That's excellent. I think a lot of first-time published authors pull the trigger way too soon.
Yeah,
and,
I agree.
It's just so tempting. And you're like, this is it. Like, as soon as I hit the button, I'll be rich and famous.
Those riches are just waiting. They're just right on the other side.
The standard rich and famous contract waiting. So. Yep. You just have to get it out there. No, a couple months is going to save you a lot of pain and embarrassment, I think. That's excellent advice. I love it.
Big time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Jen, I hate to say it because I love this show. We are there once again. Yep. We've done another one. So what do you want to leave our listeners with this week?
Two new episodes of Star Trek are on Paramount Plus. Go watch them.
What?
Yay!
What? Why don't I know this? Of
free
what?
Plug for Star Trek. Discovery.
There you go.
Of Discovery.
Oh, yeah. Discovery.
Oh, that's right.
Up
this is the final season. Okay.
Final season.
I know it's divisive, but Discovery is an excellent show and everybody should watch it. So shut up.
I agree because the first season, well, here it is. I know a lot of Star Trek fans because I've played Star Trek games with a lot of Star Trek. The first season didn't really feel like the Star Trek that we know. But turns into Star Trek. Trust me.
It got there.
It turns into Star Trek. It's regardless, one of the most hopeful shows out there, too.
Yeah, I agree. So, all right. Well, we'll leave it with that. Everybody, go watch Discovery, and no evil comments in the comments field. John, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having
John.
Me. Had a blast.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.